So a couple weeks ago, actually it might have been about a month ago by now, I was playing wiffle ball with my friend Logan. And Logan is, he'll be starting junior high in the fall. And Logan is actually a bigger Cubs fan than I am a Cardinals fan. And so most of our relationship is based around him telling me about how the Chicago Cubs are better than the St. Louis Cardinals. That's most of our conversations that we have. And so we're playing wiffle ball at his parents' house. And so, you know, even though he's a young kid, we're still guys. We still have to compete about things. And so, you know, we couldn't just play wiffle ball. We had to compete at wiffle ball. So we had a winner. So we knew who was, you know, the loser. And so we were playing wiffle ball. And since we were playing against one another, we had to play Cardinals versus Cubs, because I don't have to explain that logic. And so when we were playing, it meant that we had to know the batting order. You had to know what each batter batted like. If the batter you were trying to impersonate was right-handed, even though I'm left-handed, I had to bat right-handed, and vice versa. You had to know the pre-pitch routine. You had to know what order everyone was batting in. You had to know all of this, everything that was going on. It was really serious business until, you know, the sun went down. That kind of got in the way of things. It's hard enough to hit a wiffle ball. It's really hard to hit it when you can't see it. But now that I've got you thinking that your preacher has an unhealthy obsession with the St. Louis Cardinals, which, you know, you guys already knew that, but it's that level of imitation that I think Paul's getting at today. Logan and I were just playing wiffle ball, but everything that we were doing was in imitation of something else. And we weren't able to do that off our own abilities. We were able to do that from a lot of time sitting on a couch watching a baseball game. We were able to do that from a lot of time of watching our favorite teams, watching our favorite players, so that we could get to the place where we could imitate them almost like eerily good. The only way we could have done that is through spending a lot of time around it. And whether we know it or not, we all imitate people every day. I think all of us, or maybe it's just me, but I think all of us have a lot less original thoughts than we would think, at least in my own life. I think I've come up with something new, and then like a week later, I remember that like someone else had told me that like a week before, and I just forgot that they had told me that. I think a lot of the things that we do are in imitation of other people. You maybe notice it yourself. You have someone point it out to you when you say or you do something that you're doing something exactly like someone you're close to, how they do things. And as we're in this section of Ephesians, we're going to be in chapter 5, verses 1 to 21 today. And we're in this section where Paul is explaining how we are to live in light of the gospel. This is the idea that he goes to today, this idea of imitation. If you remember, we spent 5 weeks in the first 3 chapters of Ephesians looking at all that the gospel is, how Paul explains it, how Jesus, because of his resurrection, he has now received all of the authority of to rule over the entire world. He's now seated at the right hand of God in heaven, ruling over all of creation, and how through that he has brought us from death back to life, how he's made us possible for us to be made alive, for us to be a part of God's people, for us to be brought together in relationship with God. And now, this is the 4th week we've spent in the second half of Ephesians, looking at how we live in light of the truths of the gospel that Paul lined out in the first 3 chapters. And we spent 3 weeks in chapter 4 looking at how the gospel calls us to be one body of believers, helping each of us grow up in Jesus. We talked about how the gospel calls us to put off our old self and to put on our new self, and we talked about how all of this is for the sake of one another. Paul doesn't just call us to be individuals. He calls us to be one united body, maturing individually and as a group of believers in Jesus together, encouraging one another, living this new life, not just for our own sakes, for self-fulfillment, but so that we can build up one another. And all throughout chapter 4, we were looking at how Paul isn't just listing off a bunch of commands that he expects the Ephesians to live up to just for the sake of doing them, but he's pointing us to Jesus. He's calling us to live in light of the life that we've received from Jesus. And chapter 4, verse 32, it ends by saying that we should forgive one another as God has forgiven us through Jesus. And then Paul goes from that immediately to chapter 5, verse 1, where he calls us to imitate God. And there's debate about where Paul stops one thought and begins another one. There's a lot of continuity right there. Some people say that the end of chapter 4 should go with chapter 5. Some people say you should Paul starts a new thought right at the beginning of chapter 5. There's debate about that, but these things flow together because Paul's calling us to imitate God, and it's the same thing that he's been saying throughout chapter 4, but now he's setting it in the context of a relationship. He's calling us to imitate God because God has adopted us as his children. And because we've been brought into his family, we can now look like our father. And Paul's doing exactly what Jesus always does, setting our life with God in the context of a relationship. When you read the accounts in the Gospels where Jesus calls some of his disciples to come follow him, it is always in the context of a relationship. If you remember, when Jesus calls Peter and Andrew and James and John, when he calls them in the Gospels to be his disciples, he doesn't call them to enroll in a program. He doesn't say, start taking this class with me. He calls them, he says, follow me. And we see throughout the Gospels, the disciples are with Jesus. They're not coming to a place and learning from Jesus and then going their separate ways. They are constantly with Jesus. They are with Jesus for every waking moment for 3 years straight. They're not learning a curriculum, but they're learning a relationship. And that's exactly how Jesus calls us too. We're called into a relationship, and time again throughout Ephesians, Paul uses this metaphor of walking to describe this relationship. If you remember back in chapter 2, when Jared was here preaching, he talked about that we once walked in the course of this world, but now we walk in the good works that God has created for us to walk in. At the beginning of chapter 4 a few weeks ago, Paul said that we are to walk in a manner that is worthy of the calling that God has called us to. And then 2 weeks ago in chapter 4, verse 17, Paul commands us to no longer walk as the Gentiles do, but to walk differently. Instead of walking like people who don't know God, to walk like people who do know God. And he talks about walking again here in chapter 5. And so I want to use the three different times Paul mentions walking in these verses today to kind of be our outline for these 21 verses. Because in verse 2, he commands us to walk in love. In verse 8, he commands us to walk in light. And in verse 15, he calls us to walk in wisdom. And I think those things are all related, but I think they're three kind of separate things that I think are helpful for us to look at as different parts of what it looks like for us to walk with God. And so I want to read just verses 1 and 2 of Ephesians chapter 5 here to start. It says, "Therefore be imitators of God as beloved children, and walk in love, as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God." I think these two verses are the foundation that we have to keep in mind through the rest of this chapter. Paul's going to command us to walk in the light of God and to walk in the wisdom that God has given us, but we can't forget that love is necessary for both of those. You can walk in light, but if you don't do it with the love of God, you won't be concerned with the fact that other people aren't also walking in the light. You can walk in wisdom, but without love, we don't use this wisdom as God intended. Everything we do in this walk that Paul is calling us to, this imitation of God that he's calling us to, it all flows out of love. Over in 1 Corinthians 13, Paul says it this way. He says, If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels but have not love, I am a noisy gong or I'm a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers, if I understand all the mysteries, if I understand all knowledge, if I have all the faith, and if I can remove mountains but I don't have love, I'm nothing. If I give away all that I have, if I deliver up my body to be burned but I have not love, I gain nothing. All these things that if we saw someone do them, we would have so much respect for them as a follower of Jesus. If they're willing to do all these things or they understand all these things, and Paul looks at all that and he says, if you don't do that with love, it doesn't matter. And the first step towards imitating God is to walk in love. Nothing else we talk about in these verses is going to make any sense if it's not characterized by love. Because God's the very definition of love. He created our world, not because he needed anything, but because of love. When we broke his creation, when we rebelled against him, when we chose to abandon him, he didn't give up on us, but he did everything that was necessary to set the world right because of love. And when Jesus came into the world, he sat at the well and talked with women that no one else was associated with. He reached out and touched lepers that no one else would even go near. He patiently taught disciples that missed the point over and over again. He did countless other things that we see him do all throughout the Gospels because of love. And it's his love that's made it possible for us to be restored into relationship with him. And so if we're to imitate our Father, everything starts with love. But that love has purpose and direction because we're also called to walk in light. And so I'm going to read verses 3 to 14. It says, "But sexual immorality and all impurity or covetousness must not even be named among you, as is proper among saints. Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place, but instead let there be thanksgiving. For you may be sure of this, that everyone who is sexually immoral or impure, or who is covetous, that is, an idolater, has no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore do not become partners with them. For at one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of light is found in all that is good and right and true, and try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of the things they do in secret. But when anything is exposed by the light, it becomes visible. For anything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, 'Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you.'" I think I've shared before, I'm really not one for scary movies. But once in high school, I went to the movie theater with some friends of mine to watch a scary movie that they wanted to see. And I really didn't think it was all that scary. I didn't think it bothered me all that much. I drove home. Everything was fine. I get home. My parents were still awake. We talked for a while. And as I went to go get ready for bed, they went to bed and turned out all the lights in the house. And as I walked out of my bathroom to make the 6 steps down the hall to my bedroom, all of a sudden, everything hit me. Because everything was dark suddenly, and my parents weren't there, and even though I was 17 years old, it was terrifying because everything was dark, because the light was gone. And being in that complete darkness made a huge difference and let my imagination run wild to all kinds of terrifying things. And some things you do in the dark just don't make any sense during the day. If you think about how you walk around your house in the middle of the night with no lights on, you're either extremely cautious, you're feeling for everything, every step you take takes all kinds of time because you're making sure there's nothing on the floor, there's not a Lego you're going to step on and your foot's going to fall off. You are extremely, extremely cautious because if you walk around like you normally would, you're going to bump into all kinds of stuff unless you know your house extremely well, and you're going to cause yourself all kinds of unnecessary pain if you're not careful. But if the lights are on, or if the sun's out and there's just natural light coming in from outside, the way you walk is completely different because you can see. Because you're confident about what's in front of you, you don't have to worry about what the next step's going to look like because you can see what's right in front of you. You can see where your foot's going to land when it hits the ground. And the presence of light makes all the difference in the world. At my home church camp, at lots of church camps that I've been around, there's always one night a week where you'd have a faculty hunt where all the sponsors would go hide and the kids would have to try to find them, and all the sponsors would dress in all black and go hide somewhere. But wearing all black and trying to stay hidden only really works at night. If it was the middle of the afternoon in July and you're walking around and there's someone dressed head to toe in black laying on a roof somewhere, you're going to have a lot of questions about, well, their sanity and lots of other things. Because the presence of light makes all the difference. And I tell all three of those stories to get us to think about what Paul is saying here about the idea of darkness and light. Because if you remember back a couple weeks ago in chapter 4, when Paul explained that the life of the Gentiles, life that is lived apart from God, it is life that is darkened in understanding. And he comes back to that here. He explains in a little more detail what this life of a darkened understanding looks like. And again, he makes it very clear that we're no longer to walk in that kind of life. All kinds of sexual impurities, anything outside of a committed marriage between a man and a woman, should not be a part of God's people. Words that tear down others, words that make people laugh at the expense of others, should not be present. Because those are the type of words that people who are looking to protect themselves use. People who refuse to submit to God will one day face the consequences of their actions. But instead, God's people are called to replace those words with words that build one another up. They give thanks to God for what he's done and seeks the good of one another instead of trying to protect ourselves. And again, like he did in chapter 2 and like he did in chapter 4, Paul reminds this group that was largely non-Jewish in their background. They didn't know God before they met Jesus through the preaching of Paul. He reminds them that even though this life that he's just described as having no place among them is the life that they once knew, that even though this life he's just described is the life that they see around them as they walk to work, as they walk to the grocery store, as they walk home from work every single day, even though that's the life that they're most familiar with, that's the life they see around them promoted every single day and held up as the natural way of life, Paul reminds them that that's not how they are to live in light of the gospel. And the reason is that the gospel's flipped on the lights. And because of that, they're not wandering around in darkness anymore. They're not scared of what's around the corner or hiding right in front of them or hiding under what's going to jump out and get them out of the darkness. But the gospel has flipped on the lights. And because of that, they can see the world for how it truly is. Because of the light of the gospel, they can see the life that the world around them promotes as good is actually a life of darkness. They're able to expose the darkness of the world because they've seen the light of the gospel. And even though they were dead, like Paul said in chapter 2, the light has now come, and they're able to rise from the dead. They're able to be filled with this light that comes only from the gospel. In our world today, even though we might try to convince ourselves that we're a lot farther along than the world that Paul was living in the midst of, it really hasn't changed that much, because the things Paul was calling the Ephesians out of are still around in our world today. The gospel still reveals to us that the things that the world promotes as right and good are actually destructive, because our world is still in darkness. But we've seen the light. And when your eyes are adjusted to the dark and suddenly the light comes on, if someone wakes you up by just flipping on the light switch in the morning, it's pretty painful at first. But eventually your eyes adjust and you're able to see clearly. And that's what Paul is saying here. We were trying to walk around in the dark, trying to make our way, and God flipped on the lights, and it might be painful. Everything around you might look completely different and unfamiliar than it ever has before, but that doesn't mean you should turn the lights back off or put a blindfold on. And instead, we can see clearly, and now our goal is to walk in the light and to help others do the same, because even if the darkness might be more comfortable, it doesn't compare to the goodness of the light. But being able to see the world properly because of light isn't the end of the story, because we haven't just been called to see, we've been called to walk. And this isn't just a quick fix for everyone, but instead it means that we must walk in wisdom. Our love and the love and light that we have must also have with it wisdom. So we're able to discern God's will, so we're able to know how to live as God's people in the midst of the light. So I want to read the rest of our passage, verses 15 to 21. It says, "Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody to the Lord with your heart, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ." The love of God and the light of the gospel through Jesus comes together with the wisdom of the Holy Spirit to help us live as God's people. Because sometimes the Christian life can be frustrating with how open-ended it is. In Romans 14 to 15, Paul takes these two chapters explaining in great detail that some things people shouldn't do and some things it's okay if people want to do it. And these things you need to be careful about doing, but if you want to do it, it's fine. But you need to make sure it doesn't upset any other people. And it's so confusing because we're called to have wisdom. And that doesn't mean that the gospel gives us the freedom to go do whatever we want or figure things out on our own, but it means that the gospel is the core and the foundation of how we're to live. And the way we live out the gospel might look a little different for each one of us, but that's why we need the wisdom of God. And this wisdom isn't just something we stumble upon on our own. It comes only through this walking with God that Paul talks about. And this means that instead of trying to find pleasure and fulfillment through the ways of the world, like with wine that Paul points out here, we instead fill ourselves with the Spirit. And when we do this, we're walking in love and light and wisdom because we're no longer walking in the darkness. And I think it's important that this being filled with the Spirit that Paul talks about is focused on one another. The being filled with the Spirit makes us a part of a family that is doing the same thing. And instead of the foolish ways of the world, instead of trying to find temporary pleasure in wine or whatever it might be, Paul calls us instead to walk in wisdom and to choose a life of thanksgiving instead of selfishness, instead of chasing after all the things the world calls us to chase after that will give us fulfillment. Instead, he calls us to submit to one another because we're all submitted to Christ, because we have all been brought in to the family of the Father. And this means we have to be looking out for one another. This means we have to be people who aren't just trying to do things on our own, because none of us walks alone with God. And as people who are submitted to Jesus, as people who have been made a part of God's family, we have to take care of our brothers and sisters. And that doesn't necessarily mean that every single person has to know every single detail of your life, but it does mean that we have to have people who we're willing to be vulnerable with. And that might sound uncomfortable for you, and if it does, you're not alone, because it definitely is for me. But it's the only way we can live a life in imitation of God. The only way we can do it is if we're doing it alongside other people who are trying to do the same. And if that seems really broad and not very specific, I think that's kind of intentional on Paul's part. I don't think that means that we shouldn't care about how each and every one of us lives. It doesn't mean that we can say, well, this is how I'm going to do it, and you can't speak into how I'm going to do this. But it does mean that we've been called to be filled with the Spirit and to walk in wisdom with God. And if we do that, God will take each of us in a lot of different ways, but all of those directions will be a part of God's family. It will all be under the umbrella of being submitted to Jesus and to one another, building one another up. A friend of mine was coaching a little league baseball team a few years ago, and he had a kid on the team who wasn't happy with how much he was playing and things. There's always that one kid, and this kid was wanting to bat higher in the order, and he was wanting to pitch instead of playing the outfield. He came to him, and he was explaining to his coach, he said, you know, I'd really like to bat higher in the order. And he's like, yeah, okay. And he said, I'd really like to pitch too. And he said, well, so does every other person on the team, but okay, I'm listening. And my friend, eventually, after he explained all this, my friend said, okay, so you want to do all this, but what have you been doing to prepare for that? Have you been practicing your hitting? Have you been working on getting better at hitting so that you can hit higher in the order? And he said, well, no. And he said, well, you want to pitch. Have you been practicing pitching? Have you been at home throwing a ball against the wall, practicing so you can be prepared for, you know, when this happens one day, when you get to pitch? He said, well, no. And he said, well, what have you been doing? And he said, well, I've been riding my bike around. And his kid, he wanted to be better at baseball, but he was investing his time in things that weren't helping him in that. And we all have things we're investing our time doing. We're going to get better at the things And we're going to get better at the things we're investing our time in. And walking with God, this imitation of our Father, doesn't seem to make sense sometimes. You come to a crossroads moment of your life where you need an answer right then, and we think, well, what's God's will right here? But God hasn't called us to just come to Him when we have one difficult decision to make and then come back to Him the next time we have a difficult decision to make. He's called us to walk with Him. And this relationship doesn't always work on our schedule, but it leads to walking in wisdom in light of the light of God and the love of God. And we need one another for these things. In a world that is filled with so much anger, we need to love one another and those and those in the world. And this world needs to know that they're walking in darkness. They need to see the light of the gospel. And that might be uncomfortable for everyone involved, but walking in love means that we do not just leave other people to wander in the darkness. It means we show other people to the light so that they can see how life in the darkness falls far short of living in the light. And lastly, we need to walk in wisdom and submission to God and to one another. We need to walk in the presence of God in order to learn how to live a life in imitation of God. And we need to care for one another and submit to God and to one another. So even though it might not seem like much direction, I encourage you to walk with God, because you'll get better at whatever you're spending your time doing, whether you realize it or not. And when we walk in the ways of the world, we're led astray. But when we walk with God, we move towards this life of imitating God. And it's not a call to a set of standards. Paul isn't handing us a study guide for a test we're going to have to cram for and hope we pass one day. He's showing us a relationship that God is offering us, and he's asking us to walk in a relationship and see the transformation that takes place from that walking. I haven't completely forgot Father's Day. A friend of mine the other day was preaching today and told me he completely forgot about Father's Day, and I said, well, I feel like most fathers would be relieved if you didn't have a sermon about Father's Day, but you know, you should probably mention it at least once. And so in light of Father's Day this week, I've had a song stuck in my head. One of my favorite artists is the Zac Brown Band, and they have a new song out right now called My Old Man. And the song starts by talking about, when I was a kid, I wanted to be just like my dad, and I wanted to do everything like he did. And then I got older, I didn't understand the rules he gave me, and why he told me to not do certain things, and so I was defiant of him, I rebelled against him, I wanted to go do things my own way. And then in the last verse, it's saying, well, now I'm a dad, and now I understand why my dad did all the things he did, and I understand things completely different now, and I want to be the kind of dad that my dad was. And I think it's a really good song for Father's Day, but I think it connects well with our text here. Because in my own experience, my dad and my grandpas, they never sat me down and explained to me all the rules and everything that came with being their son or their grandson. They never said, this is what it's going to look like. These are the five things you're going to do in your life. And if you do those things, you're going to be fine. They never handed me rules, but they invited me along with them. And they let me ride in the truck with them. They let me follow them around. And through that walking with them, I learned how to grow up, but it was in the context of a relationship. And that's what Paul's calling us to. He's calling us to a relationship with our Father. He's calling us to walk with our Father, and as we walk longer with him, we learn what it looks like to be a child of God. We learn to imitate God, not because we've gotten the answers for the test, not because we've attained some standard, but because we've been walking with our Father all along, and we naturally come to look like him. And we've seen time and time again throughout Ephesians that God has reconciled us to himself, that everything starts with what God has done for us. And he has done everything that was necessary to bring us back into relationship with him, and that reconciliation should cause us to look like the one who has reconciled us. And now, because of all that God has done to bring us into his family, he calls us to live as a member of his family, to look like our Father, because even though we've been adopted into his family, that doesn't mean that a relationship with our Father that has adopted us into his family can't lead to us bearing a family resemblance. And so now we walk in the presence of God. We walk in a relationship with our Father because walking alongside him is the only path that leads to life. Let's pray. God, a life of just walking can seem really mundane. But God, that walking with you is the only way we will find true life. So God, help us be people who walk alongside you. Help us walk in your presence wherever that path might take each and every one of us, God. We want to be people who are walking alongside you wherever we go. So God, help us be people, individuals who are doing this every single day. Help us be a community of believers that is unified in our submission to you, and out of that, unified in our submission to one another and caring for one another, so that we can all walk, not just as individuals, but as a group of people who loves you and who wants your will in each of our lives and in our, as a one body of believers. That's through Jesus that I pray. Amen.